Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to be getting to your Twitter questions later in the show, so send those in now using that hashtag BucksLive. For now, we'll get to discussing that Arizona game, even though I don't want to discuss the Arizona game.
We can discuss the second half.
Yeah, let's just imagine that's the whole game, that's all that happened. I think that this is one of those games that feels hard to swallow in a lot of ways, because you always wonder, is it worse to get beat bad or barely lose? And it feels like we did both of those, which feels like the hardest thing in the world to recover from. Like, man, like, lost multiple ways, it felt like. Yeah. So for you, just, I mean, obviously we talked all week leading up to about what we thought would happen. None of what we thought would happen happened. So explain.
Thanks.
Go.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm just going to leave that there for you.
I think first thing we got to do is stop looking at the stats of the team we're going to play and assume that's going to happen again.
Yeah, we can't do that anymore.
I mean, they were the worst running team in the league, and Adrian Peterson, they had just acquired Adrian Peterson, and he had not done very well in New Orleans. And of course, you know, his first four runs are 8, 11, and 27.
Yeah, I don't know why we didn't predict that.
You know, coach said that really, coach put it on us, and I'm sure Adrian Peterson ran well. He certainly looked like he was running hard. But he said our run fits, we had mental errors, our run fits are bad, and we had missed tackles. And you certainly saw the results from that. And that dominance early on the ground made it so hard for the defense to really ever get in a rhythm against Arizona, at least in the first half, because it opened up so much play action stuff. I mean, on the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown over the middle, it was like an 11-yard touchdown, three of our defenders came forward on the play action, and it was a pretty easy touchdown for Fitzgerald. And that wasn't a good play, but also it was somewhat motivated by what had happened leading up to that. And that's what that's the thing that coaches are always talking about. If you can establish a run, you can do that. And we saw it in action. I think that was a pretty extreme example of it. And I'm sure on review of that, there's going to be some players thinking they should have done something different on that play. But nevertheless, that had something to do with it.
And so looking at the start, I know the team really just talked about how they just did not come out the way they needed to. And that feels like one of those intangible things.
Yes, agreed.
And it can be so challenging to then figure out, well, okay, how do you not do it again? Because you didn't plan to do it this time. And so it's just sort of an interesting thing to discuss and it seems like as a unit overall, it's not one guy. It just felt like overall they didn't get that start that they wanted to. So how do you think they can approach that and try and diagnose that?
If it's a matter of players getting fired up about it and telling each other in strong language about it and insisting they're going to change everything and they're going to come out for the very first play of the very first practice with intensity. If it's a matter of doing that, then the Buccaneers will solve that problem, because we heard in the locker room before and after the media was let in, we heard in the locker room them being very, very adamant of, there were some very frustrated and angry players or angry coaches. They're upset about it. And Coach Cutter and his postgame press conference used the word embarrassed. And you know that they don't ever want to feel that. Guys don't ever want to feel embarrassed. And so if it's a matter of being a motivating factor, then the problem will be resolved. But I agree with you, it is very intangible, and I don't know how you go about saying we're having trouble with slow starts, okay, we're going to fix that, other than focusing
just
on
saying
it.
Saying that you're not
going to
do it again.
And being intense about it, I suppose. I suppose if there's a level of intensity that you come out with, that could be the difference. And they feel, when they say they felt flat, did they feel a lack of energy right at the beginning of the game? Well, I don't think they're going to let that happen again. You know, this is, I just want to say, there's a lot of season left. There's 11 games, but that's only true until it isn't. A month from now, we're not going to be saying there's a lot of season left. Mm-hmm. We're going to be saying it's getting close to the stretch drive. And, you know, last year it came down to the wire for the Buccaneers, and they lost on a third-level tiebreaker. But that late season surge just wasn't quite enough because of what had come before. Mm-hmm. So the Buccaneers have to make sure they don't dig too deep of a hole. No matter if they are capable of turning it around like they did last year, if it's too deep of a hole, it's going to be too deep of a hole.
Yeah, that's very true. So looking at, obviously, the defense especially talked about they didn't do what they wanted to do. Getting down 31-0 is an incredibly challenging hole to climb out of, though they almost did it, which is incredible. But did it seem like it was more of a coming out flat, or did it seem like there were miscommunications, actual scheme things happening on defensive side of things?
Well, I would have guessed that there was communication problems, but Coach Cutter specifically said no, there were not and that was the issue last year in Arizona. Coach Cutter said it was not a communications issue, it was mental errors and missed tackles and just missed poor play, and not being ready. And maybe you can see the difference in those two games. Got down behind early in Arizona and really never pulled out of it and lost 40-7. got down 31-0 in this one and still mounted a comeback. It doesn't change the fact that it was a frustrating game, because really there's only been one game in the entire history of the NFL where a team came back from being 31 or more points down and won. So it wasn't like at any point it was reasonable to expect the Buccaneers would win that game. Now, the players have said that about midway through that second half, they were starting to feel like this is possible, you know, and maybe at that point now you're up for it and you're really excited. But I think that turnaround is an indication it wasn't a communications issue, you know. It was just poor play that they managed to fix in the second half, but too late. Yeah.
And we talked about the Arizona Cardinals offensive line having huge issues and hoping this was the game that really the defensive line and the defense overall could get to the quarterback. And we saw a little bit of that. We saw Gerald get in there. And, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. Gerald is going to be able to do his thing mm-hmm. no matter who you're playing or what else is happening. But I know overall it was still not the pressure mm-hmm. that they want to bring. So at this point, what does it seem like? Is there enough of a sample size to diagnose what's going on with the pass rush or what's happening?
Well, there's enough to say from the results what has and hasn't happened. That doesn't mean, like I would say, for instance, our four sacks in the last two games have come from Gerald McCoy and Clinton McDonald. Mm-hmm. It's easy to look at that and say we're not getting pressure from the edge, which is on paper true. That doesn't mean I'm saying that we don't have good edge rushers, right. But the fact is we're not getting pressure from the edge. You know, Coach Cutter pointed out something after the Giants game that some of our ends were just – they were thinking it was all about speed, and they were too often getting pushed around and running behind the quarterback, which is obviously ineffective. It's right. going to happen from time to time, but it can't happen the whole game. And he said that was better in the New England game. So there are technique issues that can help those guys, but it's not happening right now. I would also say that the absence until yesterday or this last game, Levante and Quan Alexander is not helping, because both those guys are actually pretty good blitzers and delayed pass rushers. Not every time a linebacker goes into the backfield is it a blitz necessarily. Sometimes it's a delayed rush based on what the back does. For instance, Levante might be keyed on the back, and if the back goes out, he's going to cover him. And if he stays in the block, then Levante is going to come. And sometimes people label that a blitz when it's really not exactly the same thing. But my point being, both Levante and Quan are pretty good linebackers at getting into the backfield when they do that. So having both those guys there will help also, but that won't necessarily help getting pressure off the edge.
Right.
Although I will say, in the one sack that Noah Spence had in the first game against Chicago, in the strip sack, and we got the fumble, Levante blitzed on that play successfully, which tied up a blocker, which helped Noah Spence. So having both those guys back, and hopefully, fingers crossed, Quan will be back this week.
Which would be huge. And speaking of Levante being back, I mean, what a huge performance from him. We talked about how challenging it can be to come back and be in football shape after being out for a little bit. And he seemed to not lose anything throughout the game. And some of his biggest plays were later, and he ended up playing the whole game. And I think he actually said yesterday on the radio show that he did not expect to play the entire game, that he thought they were going to, like, ease
him
back in.
Well, that's what they were talking about
early
in the week. Yeah.
And then he just ended up doing it, and he was like, yeah, I couldn't believe I felt fine. Like, he almost seemed surprised at himself at how well he looked. But that fumble recovery for the touchdown, I mean, he seemed like he really came back, and it's like he didn't miss anything.
I think we were discussing that before the game. We'd heard that Levante might be on what they call a pitch count. He wouldn't necessarily play every snap. But I remember somebody saying, but if we get in the game and he's doing fine,
right,
are they really
going
to pull him out? So that's clearly what happened.
Obviously, yeah.
So when Levante, his ankle was fine and he was in fine enough condition to play. And if that's the case, you're going to leave him out there, because mm-hmm. you want him out there for every single play. But he makes an obvious difference. He's a playmaker. That's his third touchdown. He also forced another fumble after that one. We just didn't happen to recover it. So we need guys like that out there.
Yeah, it's a huge contribution. And we'll talk a little bit more in this next segment. But the secondary, what were some of the areas? We talked about how excited we were to have TJ Ward back, and looking at the safety positions and all of that. Where did you see as some of the areas that it was lack of energy, or maybe the scheme coverage of things?
Yeah, the lack of pressure is not helping those guys. But, Coach Cutter said he was a little concerned about the play in the secondary right now. There's just some guys that they're just not necessarily making the plays that we expect them to make, and hopefully that'll change. I don't think you could look at that game and say it was a good game for our secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we're going to get to the offense in the next segment here. You can continue sending in your Twitter questions. Use the hashtag BucksLive. We'll get to that in the final segment, but again, we'll talk offense after this quick break, so don't go anywhere.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
We call this the jungle. It's our house today, man. Let's be great, man. Let's be great. Let's go. Let's get it then, man.
B
be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house. Yeah.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing round throw. Football touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the backdrop. It's a Levante David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking, Winston looking. James going to run to the left of the 10. He throws to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, technique, and takeaway. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercept to the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We still have one more segment after this one. It's going to be getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We talked about the defense in the first segment. If you missed it, it'll go up later on Buccaneers.com. For now, let's get to the offensive performance, which obviously, I mean, the big discussion was the quarterback. And obviously, Jameis goes down and everyone in the area collectively gasps and freaks out. So tell us what we know so far about the injury situation.
Well, there's actually several bits of good news that came out of this initial shock of Jameis Winston isn't playing because his throwing shoulder's hurt, especially when this happened not long after we're hearing about Aaron Rodgers getting sacked and breaking his clavicle and he's out for a while. And you know, visions of that start dancing.
And the
in your
tackle
head.
Looked so similar.
It did. It looked like the same play.
It looked like identical, and I think that's why it hit everybody even more freaked out.
So let me just put it this way. After being asked a few questions about it yesterday, Dirk Cutter, that is, somebody asked him, so would you call this good news? And he said, yes. So Jameis hasn't been ruled out for the Buffalo game. He could
Which
very
is
well play in the Buffalo
crazy.
Game.
Crazy. And awesome.
Yeah, and if he's still, and he said after the Arizona game, he said he's never missed a game, and he said something like, I don't think I'm going to miss one this time either. Now, players tend to be a little...
Quan said the same thing.
Right.
So.
Several weeks in a row.
Yes.
I see some people getting frustrated by that on Twitter.
Which is funny, because it's like, that's what you want him to say. You want them to be planning on coming back.
Yeah, and maybe understand that players are almost always going to say that.
Yeah, of course
But
they
now
are.
The coach is saying he hasn't been ruled out. He's probably not going to throw much, if at all, on Wednesday. Ryan Fitzpatrick, well, this is just what Coach said. Ryan Fitzpatrick will take all the first-team snaps. And we actually are a little bit lucky in that this was already the week that Ryan Griffin was going to be eligible to start practicing again for his potential return, if we choose to do so, to the active roster from injured reserve. So it's kind of lucky because he can just step right in and run the scout team.
Which is
so
huge.
For the purpose of practice, the Buccaneers don't need to sign another quarterback. And they may not end up signing another quarterback. If you feel like Jameis Winston, I was just writing about this, and I let me see what you think about this. You either have Jameis Winston fully ready to go, and then he's your starter, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is your backup. Or he's deemed not ready to play at all, and then you only really have one quarterback, and your emergency guy is Adam Humphries. I would guess in that situation you'd probably sign another quarterback. But the middle ground there is, what if you have Jameis Winston? He doesn't quite feel like he can throw it with drive it as much as usual, but he feels pretty good. He's like 80% or 90% of Jameis Winston. Logically to me, now this is not anything I've heard from anybody upstairs, but logically to me, you're probably better off with 80 or 90% of Jameis Winston than anybody you could bring in right now and coach up to be your backup quarterback.
Especially just in terms of a knowledge of the system and the offense and everything, regardless of the physical ability of it.
Right.
I mean, that's not a thing you can just plug someone in and imagine that they can run an offense.
You would be surprised. And then also, an important part of this equation is, are you putting him at any risk by putting him out there at 80 or 90%? Right. And coach said no.
Which is
there's
huge.
No risk of further injuring that. So it's not a matter of – it's kind of – determined a matter of pain tolerance, but it's not so much that because Jameis is a tough guy and he'll play through pain. It's more of can he throw it hard enough to make all the throws? And you know Jameis Winston's best throws, in my opinion – are those intermediate range ones that are a lot harder than they look because when you take into account the width of the field, if you're throwing like an 18-yard pass to the sideline, you're throwing the ball like 40 yards.
Right.
And he throws those pinpoint passes between people. And if you don't have everything on it that you're used to, you're susceptible to getting picked off, I would think.
That is very true. So looking at Ryan Fitzpatrick potentially being your starter this next week, what did you see from him, and what do you think that means we can expect if he does have to run things again?
Well, that was the other half of the good news, or whatever you'd want to call it, after Jameis left the game, is that, you know, you're hoping that you brought in a veteran quarterback, and you're hoping a guy that started 116 games, what it is, that he's at least going to be, at the very least, he's going to be competent. Well, he was clearly competent, and I would say more so than that. I mean, he hit Mike Evans downfield. He threw 3 touchdown passes. He wasn't perfect. He didn't like the 2 throws that he threw that ended in interceptions. But he was more than competent. And that makes you feel good for these times when you may not have Jameis.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think the Bucs really necessarily have to change their game plan a lot. I think what that game showed us is, A, that Ryan Fitzpatrick is still a competent quarterback, and, B, the weapons, as we've talked about all year, even in the offseason, the array of weapons that the Buccaneers have makes it difficult for the defense – if any competent quarterback is throwing passes, right? I mean, there's just so many weapons that it's hard to cover them all. I think that's what we saw in that game.
Right, and that was going to be my next question is obviously still, especially early, offense was not really able to get going in terms of points. There'd be times it seemed like they'd move the ball down the field
well. That's
happening
all year.
Yeah, and so that's my question is, what seems to stall things out? What's happening from going from moving the ball well to then all of a sudden either no points or only 3 as compared to 7?
Sometimes it's just a mistimed penalty, and a lot of times it's just something goes wrong on third down, and it's kind of inexplicable that it's been happening all year because, you know, if you can complete a 7-yard pass on second down, you should be able to complete on third down. There have been drop passes. There have been times when Jameis didn't do the right thing. Times when the protection didn't hold up, times when it was 3rd and short and we couldn't get 1 yard on a run. It's been a little bit of everything, and it's surprising because this team was pretty good on 3rd downs last year on both sides of the ball, and that has changed, unfortunately. That's your point is valid, though. We moved the ball across midfield both those times, and then it just kind of stalls there. Mm-hmm. It was all – I believe if Jameis had stayed in that game, it was eventually going to open up like it did with Ryan. It just – we need to get it going quicker.
And then obviously one of the big discussions was the 2-point conversion versus extra point and field goal versus touchdown things. I'm going to get you going. Go. Since you said that.
Somebody emailed a question about this. I'm going to put it in the mailbag.
Ooh,
so
right.
I assume the point is, well, this was this guy's point. If you kick that field goal at the end of the half and then you just simply kick extra points after each of the touchdowns, then you can do the math and say it's 38-38.
Right.
But that's a fallacy. That's a logical fallacy.
Because everything after that would have been different.
That's taking the situation after you already know what happened and basing your decisions on already knowing what was going to happen.
Right.
Coach Cutter has to make those decisions based on what he knows at the time and what the situation is at the time. And when you're down 24-0, there have only been 23 games ever where any team has come back from 24-0 to win. So you've got to know that your back's against the wall and it's going to take something extraordinary. And then you're down 31. So I don't have a problem with going for the touchdown there. At 24-0 at the end of the half. And then when you're down 31-0, okay, 4 touchdowns and a field goal would tie it up, but so would 3 touchdowns with the 2-point conversion and another touchdown. So that's 4 scores instead of 5. Basically, Coach Cutter was trying to maximize all of the scoring opportunities. And honestly, this person did send me a letter, but it wasn't rude. They were just basically asking it the way you did.
Right.
And I heard a lot of talk about that in the locker room and in the press box. But to be fair, most of the times I heard people talking about it, and by people, obviously, if you're in the press box, it's mostly media. They were bringing it up, but they weren't adamant about it. They see this side of it.
I think anybody
can look at it and go, he was making those decisions based on what he knew at the time, and it's just way too easy to reconstruct it now. And you don't know if he had gone for a field goal there, if everything else would have gone the same, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, we still have one more segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. Keep sending them in throughout this break, and we'll get to that next. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We'll be right back.
Hey, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay. The Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay. The Bucks know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay. The Bucks know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Go Bucks. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Go Bucks!
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up!
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite, Casey Phillips, and Scott Smith. Here time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in throughout this segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. All right, our first one is, do you see the Bucks making any trades before the trading deadline, especially for a defensive line?
Because we're just going to call those teams that are giving away good defensive
ends.
Yeah, get them on the phone. All those teams that are willing to trade good defensive ends. I will say this. The Buccaneers have never shied away from trading, I think. Mm-hmm. And even with Jason Light, it hasn't all been Jason Light, but he's not shied away from training. So it's certainly not outside the realm of possibility. But don't expect that this trading deadline is going to bring in something that's going to instantly fix any particular problem that we have. They're talking about the pass rush.
Right.
Who's going to trade you a pass rusher in the middle of the season? Even if it's a team out of contention, they're not going to trade a really good pass rusher. You know, maybe we can find some depth, but as Coach Cutter says all the time when asked about things like this, he's like, these are the guys we have. This is what we're rolling with. So we're going to teach them up. We're going to win with what we have.
Okay. Doug wants to know about run gaps against the Buccaneers defense. He says, have you seen or heard anything about if it's more what the other team's O-line is doing or blown assignments on the Bucs' part?
According to the coaches and players in this Arizona game, it was blown assignments and mental errors that they didn't do anything scheme-wise that we were not expecting, which, you know, it must be – I don't know which would be more frustrating, to come into a game and get completely fooled and go, man, we never expected them to do that, or to have them do the things you expected to do and not stop it the way you expected to stop it. I know the guys were frustrated about that. So the answer to the question is it was mistakes by the Buccaneers, at least in their opinion. Now, if you ask this question to Arizona, I'm sure they're going to say, we blocked it great, and our runner, you know, that's fair too. But from the Buccaneers' point of view, some of their problems in the running game, and our run defense has been pretty good this year, so it's reasonable to believe that they know what they're talking about. But it's a very specific gap type of defense, so if the right player doesn't hit the right gap, you can see what would happen.
Mm-hmm. Taylor wants to know, did we do the two-point conversions more because of what we think of Murray or situation?
No. But that's an easy question, but I'm glad it's asked because it has nothing to do with Murray. Nothing
I think
whatsoever.
A lot of, just because of what has happened with the kicking games recently, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people did assume it was a lack of confidence instead of it being a situational thing. So that is
we would not assign Murray. We wouldn't have signed Patrick Murray if we didn't think he could make extra points. Now, will he go the entire season and never miss an extra point? That would be a bold claim because almost every kicker in the league now is missing a couple of them a year mm-hmm. now that they're 33-yard field goals. So I won't go that far. But, no, they fully confident Patrick Murray. I would go so far as to say they probably feel better about the situation now because, you know, they've had a history with Patrick Murray and it was all pretty good. So, no, I think they're very confident in him.
Okay. Mark kind of has a two-part question, but I already know your answer probably to part of it. But he asked if we think we should bring in another cornerback. He thinks there are a few free agents still out there. I think he's probably going to go to your suggestion.
But I'd be interested. If he says they're out there, I wonder who he's talking about.
Yeah, he doesn't mention any specific people. But and then he says he thinks that potentially Hargraves might be better in the slot and then bring in that other corner to be on the outside with Grimes. What do you think about him
in
the slot?
Well, last year he was not better in the slot. He was better on the outside. And you know, I think all of this is really true about Vernon. He had the typical what you'd expect rookie struggles in the first half last year, played a lot better in the second half, and they tried him in the slot. In fact, his initial role was the old Rondé Barber type role where he would play outside and then come in the slot. He was getting better results on the outside, so they decided to go ahead and scrap that and just let him concentrate on playing every snap on the outside. And I think they still fully feel that's better. That's what he played in college. He didn't really play in the slot. I don't know why somebody would assume he'd be better in the slot, unless they're just assuming because of his size, because he's not the tallest corner, but none of our cornerbacks are tall.
Right.
So, no, I think he should probably stay on the outside. I think, okay, Coach Cutter was talking about Vernon Hargraves in his press conference last night, and he was asked, was it a talent issue? If Vernon was struggling, was it a talent issue? He said, no. Okay, so the Buccaneers still believe that this guy is a talented player that was talented enough to take him 11th overall. So what we need to do is get the best out of Vernon Hargraves, not try to replace him after 1 year and five games.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's still there. He's, you know, and we saw it last year, so I believe it's still there.
Okay. This is an interesting question. First of all, Keith says, I love Winston, so I'm not hating. I like that he gives the precursor of this. He said, but did you notice that Fitz's play actions seemed better? He said, I can usually tell right away, but Fitz was fooling me.
Well, I didn't notice that. So I think that's how he phrased the question. Did I notice?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice, but I won't refute it. And it's not necessarily out of the realm of possibility or expectations, because lots of times it's the guys who have been in the league a long time who have really perfected that play action. I think the best play action quarterback I've ever seen as a Buccaneer quarterback was Steve DeBerg. And now we're talking about a guy who'd been in the league for a long time. And some guys are just, they really are outstanding at it. They'll hold the ball out, put it right in the guy's stomach, and then pull it away at the last minute. And they do a good job of hiding it as they run away. It's reasonable to believe that. I can't say I know that because, no, I did not notice, but I'm not refuting what that person is saying. And that's probably one of those things that a quarterback learns along the way. Jameis Winston is five games into his third season, and Fitzgerald has been in the league since 2004 or something like that.
Shawnee wants to know why you think DeSean Jackson hasn't been used more in the slot.
Well, has he not, though? I mean, we kind of move guys around a lot. I saw Mike Evans in the slot, but what's the point? Why would we put him in the slot?
She said he seems very effective there, but yeah, I mean.
Well, the play that he took on a quick slant, 41 yards against New England, wasn't out of the slot. It was from an outside spot. And we've already got a guy who's really killing it in the slot. Adam Humphries is doing great. Seems to get better every game. I mean, I don't think you can complain. How many teams are getting more out of their slot receiver than what we're getting out of Adam Humphries? Now, I do think we mix guys around from time to time. Like I said, I saw Mike Evans in the slot on one play, which is not what you expect. DeSean Jackson's been in the league since 2008, and he's been the best big play receiver in the league in that span, and he's been an outside receiver. I think everybody knows what to do. I think coaches know what to do with DeSean Jackson.
Right.
And I think they're using him right, and I think it's working. It's not working as good as it could so far, but it's working, and it's getting close to really working.
Okay. The Jimenez family says, do you think coach might change to more of a dink and dunk play call, because it seems like doing the deep ball as often as we're trying, it seems to be hurting us?
Well, I don't think we dink and dunk, so I don't think it's A and B, two polar opposites there, and we're running out of time. But, you know, when Jameis is in there, it's not really dink and dunk. Yeah, we're not having great results on a per-throw basis throwing downfield, but he throws a lot of intermediate-range passes. That's not really dink and dunk. And, you know, Fitz hit Mike Evans on that great fly in the last game. So, yeah, I could see maybe being a little bit more judicious with it, but sometimes it's just a matter of making a good throw.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us on this edition of Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Thank you so much for sending all your questions in. We'll be back here later in the week. Keep them coming throughout that time. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll see you then.